Christmas Day, 1929, Germantown, North Carolina. The Lawson family, all nine of them, are preparing for the day. Son Buck is hunting, daughter Marie has baked a cake, and mother Fanny is taking care of her smaller children and running the house. But it wasn't a silent night, holy night for this family. Father Charlie Lawson would murder them one by one. But why? Some say he had a head injury that caused him to go mad. Others say Charlie had a secret. This is the story of the Lawson family murders, a Christmas surprise. Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And
is this Eskimos or what?
Kinda, not really. Oh. This is for Samoan friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A feel my, a feel my, a feel my.
Nice.
There you go.
When Santa stops there on his way to my house,
yes.
On his way to our house,
yes.
He'll know how to say, welcome, welcome, welcome.
And I also have a Christmas cookie to go with my coffee today.
Oh, my gosh. No chewing in the microphone. People hate that. Don't do it.
It's really good, though.
It's Christmas week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited. I love Christmas. It's my favorite time of the year, although I have not watched one Hallmark movie. I did see something, and I posted it in the In-Laws and Outlaws. By the way, go join the In-Laws and Outlaws. It's
yes.
Our closed Facebook group. We have a good time in there. Just
yep.
Answer the questions. But I posted something in the In-Laws and Outlaws that was basically, I need a Hallmark movie where she is trying to catch a serial killer and, like, get a boyfriend in a small town who owns a bakery or something like that. Yeah.
I don't think it's such a tall order.
I don't. I think I could write that, actually.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, speaking of stories, mm-hmm. This one is old. It's crazy. This happened almost 100 years ago.
Wow.
It's really amazing. I actually stumbled upon this story. I saved it for Christmas
okay.
because there is a Netflix show called 28 Days. And there's some paranormal investigators that talk about this
oh, really?
Case. Wow. Yeah. So it's interesting. I'll provide a link in the show notes for
okay.
it, but it's really, really interesting.
Okay.
I'm going to get started. Before I do, I want to thank Wikipedia, mm-hmm. SouthernCalls.com, the Greensboro News, the Charlotte News, the Charlotte Observer, the Raleigh News and Observer, the Watauga Democrat, Netflix's 28 Days, and The Meaning of Our Tears, the True Story of the Lawson Family Murders by Trudy J. Smith. I did read it. There'll be a link to her book in the show notes. You can get it on your Kindle.
Nice. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
Charles Davis Lawson is born on May 10th, 1886, in Lawsonville, Stokes County, North Carolina, to William George Augustus Lawson and Nancy Jane Hill. He had 7 siblings, so 8 kids total. He's the third. He's the third in line.
Okay.
His siblings were John, Sarah, Dosie, Lizzie, Elijah, Marion, and George.
Wow, that's a lot of kids.
So 8 kids, which is interesting because Charlie will also have 8 children.
Hmm.
Charlie was reserved and serious. He had apparently intense steel blue eyes. He had brown hair and he wore it really short and parted down the middle. I read that he was not, quote, overly handsome, end quote, but had a rugged quality and a strong physique from a lifetime of hard work in the fields.
All right.
And Charlie was known for his quick temper. But he was also a guy who was known to, like, walk a mile in the hot sun to help a neighbor in need.
Okay.
Charlie and his family are tobacco farmers, something we have a lot of here in Kentucky. It's hard work, man. That's hard work. And my dad used to work in a tobacco field when he was a little kid.
Yeah, my grandparents grew tobacco.
And he's talked about how that's a lot of hard work. And your hands stain.
Yep.
And your hands, so you look like you've just committed a murder all the time because your hands are red from the tobacco.
I remember as a kid, it was always my favorite thing to go over to my grandparents' house after they had, you know, picked the tobacco and done whatever they, but I'd walk into the barn and that smell, the sweet smell of tobacco leaves. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not condoning smoking,
No.
Not in any way, shape, or form, but we have a lot of tobacco farmers in Kentucky.
Yep.
Charlie is raised in Lawsonville, and when he's 24 years old, in the fall of 1910, he meets and falls in love with Fanny Manring. Fanny is born on October 13th, 1892, to John and Ona Manring. Fanny was known to be quiet, hardworking, and had light blue-gray eyes that twinkled when she laughed.
No. Hey, is Fanny short for something, or was that
Fanny is her name.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fanny.
Fanny is her name. There are lots of great old Southern names in here. So I mention a lot of names, and there are a lot of really good old Southern names.
Okay.
Charlie and Fanny are married March 12, 1911 in Stuart, Virginia, which is just 12 miles away from Lawsonville, by Minister J.M. Martin of the Missionary Baptist Church.
Yeah.
Charlie's 24, Fanny is 19, and by the end of the summer of 1911, she's pregnant for the very first time.
Okay.
In 1912, Fanny gives birth to their first child, Marie LaVon. And the next year, Fanny gave birth to James Arthur, who will go by Arthur, but also goes by Buck.
Oh.
And the year after that, in 1914, she had William Sanders. 3 years later, in 1970, Carrie Lou comes along.
Carrie Lou.
They are prolific. Two of Charlie's younger brothers moved to Germantown, North Carolina, to farm, which is about 20 miles south of Lawsonville. Charlie wants to be near his brothers, and in 1918, Charlie packs up his wife and four children in a covered wagon, I read, and moved them all to Germantown. And he thought that he could grow some good tobacco in this area, and Germantown was closer to the tobacco market and the warehouses.
Okay.
He rents farmland to grow tobacco. He's a tenant farmer, and he works hard. He's going to have his family working hard, too. There's a story about Charlie during this time that he owed one of his neighbors
$2. Oh, wow.
And he rode a mule all the way to their home, which apparently was not an easy task, to pay back the money.
Wow.
Charlie was considered to be a good and honest man.
Right.
In 1920, little William gets sick. He never recovers, and he dies of pneumonia. Hmm. 2 years later, in 1922, Fanny would give birth to another daughter, Lucinda Maybell. They call her Maybell. Then in 1925, Fanny and Charlie add another child to the family, James William. And it's at this point that the family moves again to be tenant farmers on the Broder property. But Charlie really wanted land of his own, and that's the dream, right? If you're a farmer, you want land of your own to farm. And 2 years later, in 1927, they add a new son to their brood, Raymond, and they buy a farm on Brook Cove Road. It's 114 acres. They bought it for $3,200, or in today's money, about $55,000.
Okay.
On the property, there's a little log cabin, but Charlie promised Fanny that he would build her a big modern home as soon as they could afford it. Now, little Raymond is only 3 weeks old when they make this move.
Okay.
Then during the summer of 1927 and during the tobacco harvest, Charlie is working on a drainage ditch and he's swinging a mattock, or what I would call a pickaxe.
Okay.
He's breaking up the ground around this wire fence, and somehow in this process, he gets a kickback, like a recoil of the pickaxe, and it hits him square in the forehead between his eyes. Mm. Now, he never loses consciousness, but he's going to have a headache on most days for the rest of his life.
Wow.
And when he sees a doctor right after the accident, he gets an A-OK. Charlie, you're all right. Rub some dirt on it. You'll be okay. But it's 1927, so who knows what's going on up in that noggin of his, because no CAT scan, no MRI.
Right.
October and November, Charlie is bringing in his first crop of tobacco from his own land, and the whole family helps, even the tiny little kids. But when Christmas rolls around in 1927, there are no presents for the children.
Hmm.
Nothing. Nada.
Why?
And he tells Fanny that they can't afford it.
Oh.
That's called foreshadowing.
Uh-oh. Dun, dun, dun.
In January 1928, Charlie takes his tobacco to the Piedmont warehouse in Winston-Salem so he can sell it. And while he's there, he and another man bump into each other. And when Charlie asks him for an apology, he's like, dude, watch where you're going.
Yeah, you bumped into me, dude.
Stop bump, you know, yeah. Can't you say you're sorry, whatever?
Yeah.
So he's asking for this apology, and these two get into a fight, and the other guy pulls a switchblade, and he cuts Charlie. He actually punctures Charlie's lung.
Oh, wow.
And Charlie's going to spend the next 2 weeks in the hospital.
Wow.
The next year at Christmas, 1928, after the townspeople kind of catch wind that the kids didn't have a Christmas in 1927, mm-hmm. Charlie's kids, they want to help out. And friends actually offer to buy some presents for the children.
Oh, that was nice.
To which Charlie replies, quote, we don't need no help. I'll see to it they get what they need, end quote.
Hmm.
And again, Charlie didn't allow the family to celebrate Christmas, and there were no presents.
Really?
Yeah. 2 years in a row.
Wow.
Now, remember I told you Charlie had always kind of had a temper, but yeah. He's getting worse. And he kind of liked to beat his children, sometimes for no reason.
Hmm.
But by 1929, Arthur, or Buck, the second to oldest, he's a strapping 16-year-old boy who's bigger, taller, and stronger than his dad. He's stronger than Charlie.
Okay.
And it's at this point that Fanny is pregnant again with their last child, Mary Lou.
Mary Lou.
Mary Lou who? Cindy Lou who?
There you go.
Yeah. This is not an easy pregnancy, and Fanny is really sick a lot. So this is 8 pregnancies.
Jeez.
2 just about killed me. I cannot imagine. I would think by the 8th child, they're just walking out and waving hi. Hey, Mom. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Think if college was part of the equation back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, I mean, how do you send all those kids to college? Yeah. Those are the things we think about today.
Yeah.
Obviously, Charlie's not thinking about it because he's not even thinking about giving them a Christmas present.
True,
so
true.
But Charlie is getting meaner, and he's whipping the kids with a switch a lot. Like, he's the guy who's like, go pick the switch off the tree so I can whip you with it.
Yeah.
And by the summer of 1929, Charlie tells his brother that his head hurts all the time. He has these massive headaches. And it's been 2 years since he hit himself in the head with this pickaxe. And he tells his brother that the misery in my head is so bad I can hardly bear it. And it, quote, seems like there's trouble at every turn, end quote. But he didn't elaborate on that.
Okay.
Now, if you've ever had a migraine headache, or if you've ever suffered from headaches, I do. I suffer from migraines.
Right.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you can't do anything. They are debilitating for sure.
Yeah.
Mary Lou is born on August 26, 1929. So their youngest is right out of the package, and their oldest, Marie, is now 17.
Can you imagine?
She's been birthing babies for 17 years. And Marie is doing all the things that a 17-year-old would do. She hangs out with her friends and her best friend, Ella Mae Johnson, and she has her eyes on a boy, Charlie Wade Hampton.
Okay.
Do you like how everybody's got 3 names? Welcome to the South, y'all. Marie loved to cook, and she really liked to bake cakes, something that Marie and I have in common.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes she'd have to borrow cake pans just to do it. But she cooks along with her mother, and the extended family gets together a lot. Because remember, Charlie's 2 brothers and their wives and their kids, they all live in this same little farming town.
Right.
And the wives begin to notice that something is up with Marie. Marie had put on some weight. And one day when the families are all together, Fanny tells her sister and her sister-in-law a story about Charlie. She tells them that he came to her, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, quote, I need to tell you something, but I don't know how, end quote. He doesn't say anything more about it, but Fanny sees that Charlie isn't sleeping at night, like ever. He's irritable. And by November of 1929, things are getting weird. Mm. Fanny finds Charlie in the tobacco fields in the middle of the night on his knees, praying.
Really?
He will tell her that he can't take the misery in his head.
Hmm.
On November 2nd, 1929, Fanny and Charlie host a party for Sadie Mae Hampton. It's a Sunday night dinner, and the women are all talking again and asking Fanny, how's Charlie? And she tells them Charlie's been up in the middle of the night a lot, and that she's found him in the fields praying, and that she finds him cleaning his guns.
Ooh.
Endlessly.
That's
cleaning
not good.
His guns
not
and then
good.
Checking on them.
Yeah.
Are they loaded? Are they where they're supposed to be? He's crying in the middle of the night. He's praying in the middle of the night. And at this point, the family knows, and they're keeping it from others, but Charlie is so violent that only 16-year-old Buck could control him.
Wow.
And Charlie seemed like he was afraid of his son, Buck.
Mm. Okay.
As December approaches, Fanny asks Charlie if maybe this year they could celebrate Christmas. She wants to do something for the children for
sure.
The holidays. And Charlie replies, quote, don't worry about Christmas. I'm planning a surprise, end quote.
Oh, no. Wow.
And Fanny questions him, what kind of surprise? What are you doing? What are you planning?
Yeah.
And he tells her, quote, I told you I have a surprise plan for the whole family. I'm taking care of everything, end quote.
Wow.
2 weeks before Christmas, Marie spends the night at her BFF's house, Ella Mae Johnson, and she and Ella are talking about everything, boys, their families. And Ella Mae had even confided in Marie just a year earlier that her father had sexually molested and raped her, taking her virginity.
Oh, no.
So when Ella Mae asks Marie about her weight gain, Marie confesses and says, I'm pregnant.
Wow.
And when Ella Mae asks, who is the father, like Maury Povich?
Yeah. There was no envelope with this one.
No. Marie says, quote, it's my papa's baby, end
wow.
quote.
Oh, my.
Now, Marie tells Ella Mae that her father knows, and she had told him. And he said, quote, if you tell anyone, especially Mama, there would be some killing done, end
Gee
quote.
Whiz. Wow.
About 10 days before Christmas, Charlie tells the whole family, we're going to Winston-Salem, and we're going shopping. So the whole family loads up in this modified 1926 Model T with a homemade truck bed with curtains and removable benches.
Nice.
And Charlie and Fanny and the small children are in the cab, and the others are in the back, probably freezing their asses off.
I was going to say.
All
geez.
The way to Winston-Salem.
Wow.
Which is 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
The kids are very excited, as you might imagine. They've not had a Christmas in years, and their dad has been mean to everybody for the past few years. And for Fanny, he's just been acting weird, the crying, the praying, the sleepless nights, and the constant checking and cleaning of his guns.
Right.
Little Carrie, who is 12, asks if she can get silk stockings like her older sister Marie. And Fanny tells her that she's too young.
Hmm.
But Charlie steps in and tells her, you can have whatever you want.
Okay.
Like, who is this guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Each child picks out a full outfit from head to toe, and Charlie whips out a wad of cash and pays for it all. Then he tells them they have one more stop. Still dressed in their new outfits, Charlie drives them to the photo studio. They're going to have a family portrait taken. I will post it in the In-Laws and Outlaws. And maybe it's because it's the time that they're taking this photo, like late 20s. Because I've seen other photos from the late 20s, early 30s. And people don't always look happy.
Yeah.
And these people do not look happy.
Right.
The Lawsons do not look happy.
Right.
And in the photo, poor little Fanny looks like she's got one foot in the grave and another on a banana peel. Mm. Like the mom looks tired. She's given birth and raised 8 kids and lost one to illness and has one that is 4 months old in her arms.
Jeez.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, she's haggard.
Yeah. That's what I said. One foot in the grave, another on a banana peel.
Yeah.
They take this photo. The whole gang goes back to Germantown. It's early in the evening. Then on December 18th, 1929, a friend, Martha Tuttle Montgomery, dies. The whole family goes to the wake. And then a day later, Charlie and his friends are discussing the death of Martha when Charlie confesses, quote, I wouldn't mind dying, but I would want to take my family with me, end
Ooh.
Quote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't even have to say.
Yeah,
I mean, he was basically foreshadowing.
Yeah, he was just telling him what he was going to do.
Yeah. When Christmas Day arrived, the Lawson family household had no decorations and no presents, but Charlie still had his special surprise waiting for them. Mm. Now, as it happened that Christmas, a relative had been staying with them for the holiday, Sanders Lawson. It was a normal morning. Marie and Fanny made breakfast for everybody, and Buck and Charlie tended to the animals. Then after that, Buck tells his mom and dad that he and Sanders are going hunting. Now, I know a lot of people who live in rural areas. They'll go hunting on Thanksgiving. They'll go hunting on Christmas. This isn't anything unusual.
Right.
Now, on this Christmas morning, Marie was baking a cake, and she's curling her hair for the day because Charlie Wade Hampton's coming over, and he's going to take her to the Christmas program at Palmyra Church.
Okay.
And when her cake is done, Marie sets it on the table to cool, and she makes icing. And after she ices the cake, she decorates it with raisins. There's a reason I'm telling you this.
Okay.
The family is in and out of the home that morning, but Charlie is staying by the fire inside the house. And what I did not mention was that it was a very cold Christmas in North Carolina that year, and they had snow on the ground. Mm. 6 inches.
Oh, wow.
Of snow. It was a white Christmas.
Yeah, I lived in North Carolina for 14 years, and we had probably a total of 3 snows.
Yeah. Buck and Sanders return from hunting because they've run out of ammo. And when Buck asks his dad, Charlie, for some ammunition, he refuses to give him any, even though he has it.
Hmm.
So Buck and Sanders walk into town to buy some at the local general store. And when Buck says, this is what they're going to do, Charlie says, good idea. Bring me some back too.
Oh, geez.
Now, the family was going to Uncle Elijah's house that day, Charlie's younger brother, and Carrie Lou and Maybelle got dressed and ready to go. Fanny put on their coats. And while this is happening, Charlie leaves the fire he's been sitting by and staring into and goes to the tobacco farm. But before he does, he takes his rifle with him.
Mm.
And what no one knows is that inside the tobacco barn near the house, it's 500 yards from the house, but close enough.
Right.
Charlie has hidden his shotgun. Charlie walks to the back corner of the barn and he waits. Carrie and Maybelle start walking toward their uncle's house. And Charlie sees them coming and steps out from the barn and fires his gun.
Mm.
Carrie Lou is 12. She is the first to be shot. She puts her hand up to her face. Her father shoots her through the hand and into her head.
Oh, jeez.
Maybelle screams and turns to run away from her father, but his gun jams. And even though Charlie had cleaned it and checked it over and over again, it jams on him.
Right.
So Charlie switches to his 12-gauge shotgun and fires into her back.
Mm.
The blast rips through her little 7-year-old body, destroying the left side of her torso and her left lung. The girls are mortally wounded. They are not dead.
Mm.
Like, they're moaning. They're not dead. So what does Charlie do? He bludgeons them in the head with a short piece of a 2x4 that he's found in the barn until they are no longer breathing.
Wow.
He beats them to their deaths, blood flowing in the white snow just outside the barn.
Mm.
But here's the kicker. He's careful not to damage their faces.
Really?
Like, he wanted people to have something to see.
Wow.
Now, the neighbors can hear the shots ring out, but they think it's the Lawsons just rabbit hunting.
Sure.
But one neighbor does think that she hears someone shout, quote, Papa, don't shoot me, end quote. Now, this is after the fact. So can you imagine if that's what you thought you heard?
Yep.
Charlie picks up Carrie's hat and tucks it into his pocket. And then one at a time, he drags their little bodies into the tobacco barn.
Mm.
And when he has them inside, he places these flat stones that were used in the barn under each of their heads. And he crosses their arms in front of them. And he places Carrie's little hat right by her head.
Jeez.
Back at the house, Fanny needs wood for the fire. She walks past Marie in the kitchen, out the front door to the wood pile. She's not wearing a coat, even though it's frigid outside. Mm-hmm. She's just making a quick trip, as you might do. I do this all the time, like when I'm running to the trash can or something to drop off the trash.
Right.
And then you come inside and you're like, jeez, it's cold outside.
Yep.
And that's what she's doing. That's what Fanny's doing. She steps out on the front porch, she sees Charlie running toward the house with guns in his hands. Charlie drops one gun, raises the other, aims the shotgun directly at his wife. She turns to run, but he fires anyway, and the wood that she's holding in her arms, it flies everywhere. She falls on the porch. She's screaming in pain. He had shot her at such close range that he had ripped a hole in her body, taking half of her heart.
Oh.
Marie comes running outside to see what's happened, only to find her dad is dragging her mother into the house by one arm, and he's got his gun in the other. Now, in the backyard, playing was Charlie's four-year-old son, James, and his friend, Hassel. And they hear the gunshot. They come running into the house through the back door, and they find Marie holding her dying mother, who's just bleeding out in her arms.
Yeah, wow.
Another friend, Abe Heath, hears the shotgun blast, and he hurries to the Lawson's house, only to find Charlie dragging Fanny through the front door. And he turns around and he runs home.
Yeah.
But little Hassel is still watching with James in the back room.
Wow.
And Charlie starts to bludgeon his wife in the head with the butt of his gun. But Fanny's already dead.
Yeah.
Charlie very calmly breaks down his 12-gauge and adds shells. And Marie grabs the poker from the fireplace because she's going to defend herself. That's
sure.
The only thing that's close by.
Yeah.
But Charlie points the shotgun and fires point blank into Marie's back as she's reaching for this poker. And the force of the shot snapped her neck and sent her flying into the fireplace mantle. The blow will break her teeth.
Hmm.
And there's a hole all the way through her body.
Jeez.
Charlie steps over Marie's dead body and only then notices that this little kid, Hassel, is standing in the doorway. James and his little brother, Raymond, who is two, they're both hiding behind their friend, Hassel.
Mm.
And they turn and start to run. They're hiding from their dad. And Hassel will later say, quote, "Charlie had this wild look on his face, and for a second he stood there and looked right at me. It was like Charlie was telling me, get out or get shot," end quote.
Wow.
So this little boy, Hassel, turns and runs home. That's why we know what happened in those few moments.
And how old was Hassel again?
He's like 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
And then the two other sons are 4 and 2.
Gotcha.
Charlie's other two. They're little bitty kids.
Wow.
He runs all the way home. Hassel runs all the way home. He does not tell his parents.
What?
Because he is terrified.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean,
he's
6 years old. Yeah.
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 Charlie then finishes off Marie by bludgeoning her in the head with his shotgun. Then he begins to search for little James and Raymond, who are 4 and 2. He doesn't shoot Raymond, but he grabs him and bludgeons him in the head with the butt of the rifle, and he does not damage this little 4-year-old's face.
Mm.
Don't know how. That's a small child.
Yeah.
But that's what the sources said. And Raymond's body was halfway under the stove, and most believe that he was trying to hide there, and Charlie pulled him out by the legs.
Mm.
And bludgeoned his little head.
That's terrifying.
Charlie then goes after 2-year-old Raymond. He finds him under a bed. He drags him out. He also bludgeons him in the head. Now all that is left is little 4-month-old Mary Lou.
No.
And he also bludgeons her in the head, killing her with one blow.
Wow.
This is a 4-month-old child.
Yeah.
He's killing an infant, but he's killed everybody else. So
right.
But then it's crazy because he takes a pillow from his bed, the bed that he shares with his wife, Fanny, and he places it under Fanny's head and crosses her arms in front of her. Then he took Marie's pillow from her upstairs room. He actually left bloody handprints along the wall of the stairs, and he brings Marie's pillow down and puts it under her head. Then he gets James's and Raymond's pillows and does the exact same thing with them. They're all in front of the fireplace with their little heads under pillows and their arms crossed, except for Raymond, who he left under the stove, but he still put a pillow under his head.
Well, I was going to say, why do you do that? But there's no rhyme or reason.
There's no rhyme or reason for any of it.
Yeah, guy's nuts.
Charlie then leaves the shotgun with the damaged stock and a bent barrel inside the house because he's used it to kill everybody.
Sure.
Then he takes another shotgun and a rifle with him, and he walks away. Now, meanwhile, Abe Heath, who's like seen Charlie dragging Fanny in the front door.
Right.
He runs to his own home and he tells his family what he saw at Charlie Lawson's house. And while his family is deciding what to do, like, they don't want to get shot too. And remember, people didn't really have phones, so it's not like they could call anybody.
Yeah, it's 1929.
Yeah. But about this time, Charlie's brother Elijah shows up asking for help. And here's why.
Okay.
Brother Elijah and his two sons had been out hunting that day as well. And they walked to Charlie and Fanny's house, noticing that it was eerily quiet. It's very quiet.
Right.
Now, apparently, as they approach the house, they don't notice that there's blood in the snow out in front of the house or on the front porch. I don't know how.
I was going to say, how do you not notice blood in the snow?
I know, but they can't get the front door open and no one is answering them. So they push open the door as hard as they can and they find the bodies. Hmm. They can see the bodies through a crack in the door because it's Fanny's feet up against the door. That's why they can't get it open.
Okay.
But they hear shuffling upstairs. They'd walked in on Charlie getting pillows to put under the heads of his family.
Oh, wow.
They turn and run, thinking there's a murderer in this house.
Sure.
And I wrote in my notes, no, it's just your brother, Elijah. He is a murderer, but yeah. So Elijah gets his boys home. He gets ammunition, got his gun, and he heads back to his brother's place. And others have heard the news because word travels fast in these small farming towns, and everyone heads to Charlie's place to either gawk or they got plans to take down a killer.
Yep.
When Elijah and the others make it back to the house, other bodies are found at the barn, those of Carrie and Maybelle. And Charlie's brother Elijah starts looking for Charlie and for Buck, who had gone into town to get ammunition. They're like, where's Buck? Buck's not here.
Right.
So Charlie's gone to a secluded pine thicket behind the barn. He washes his hand in a nearby creek. They find his footprints later in the snow. He uses at least four matches to try to warm his hands. They also find those near him. He paces. He paces for hours.
Hmm.
And then he takes a twig that he's going to use to engage the trigger of his shotgun. He pulls a little pencil and an old receipt from his pocket and writes, quote, troubles can cause, end quote. Did not finish the sentence. Then he pulls out another piece of paper like he's thinking, like he's going to start a new note.
Sure.
It's another receipt, and he writes, no one to blame but. And he doesn't finish either one of these notes.
Wow. Okay.
Meanwhile, Buck is arriving at his home, and everybody's there. He's back with his ammunition, and his Uncle Elijah holds him back when he sees what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And when the sheriff arrives, both Elijah and Marion, that's his other brother, they're both at the scene along with Dr. Chester Helsebeck.
Okay.
And more men keep showing up at the farm and they're armed and ready for battle. But when they get into the house through the back door, because the bodies are blocking the front, they go upstairs to look for Charlie because they think he's dead too.
Sure.
And the sheriff actually won't go upstairs. He's afraid. But another doctor who's joined the scene does, Dr. Bynum, who says if Charlie is upstairs, dead or alive, quote, he won't shoot me, end quote.
Okay. Why do you think that?
I guess they had some sort of relationship. Maybe he's the doctor who said, nah, you're fine, rub some dirt on it. I don't know. Yeah. But he was an older guy.
Sure.
And he wasn't afraid. He said, I'll go up and see if he's there. But of course, Charlie's not there. He's cowering in the woods. But they don't know if Charlie is the one who killed the family and now he's run off or he's dead someplace else. Because remember, they think that Charlie's a good guy.
Right.
Even though he's strict.
Right.
Or beating his children and raping his teenage daughter, the parts that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
But the locals are thinking, where in the hell is Charlie Lawson?
Sounds like a TV episode.
I know. It's been 3 hours since the murders and Charlie's still alive and on the property walking his circle in this pine thicket. He's freezing his ass off and his dogs are by his side.
Oh, wow.
Because the dogs are thinking, going hunting. He's got a gun. Yeah. We're out in the woods. Yeah.
Sure.
Going rabbit hunting. And then they hear a gunshot.
Mm.
Now, if you've ever lived in the country, you can hear somebody fire a gun from miles away.
Yep.
From miles away. So they hear this gunshot. And Charlie's dogs come running toward home. and the crew follows the dogs back into the woods. They're thinking these dogs are going to lead us straight to Charlie.
Sure.
And they did. They find footprints. And Charlie had used the shotgun and the stick from the tree to engage the trigger to shoot himself in the chest. He's blown himself backwards. He's dead when they find him, but his body is still warm.
Hmm.
Now, why did Charlie kill his family? This is what they're thinking. What has happened? He killed his family. The men carry him out of the woods into Charlie's house. All of the bodies, the whole family, are brought to the Yelton Funeral Home in Madison, North Carolina. But the town's all a titter, and people start going to the house to see where it all happened.
Right.
And they're all walking inside the crime scene. They're just walking around. It's 1929.
Yeah.
Everybody and their brother is walking through this crime scene. They want to see it. They're nosy.
Yeah, this is before profiling.
I mean, they're so nosy about the whole thing.
Yeah.
There was a graveside service at Broder Cemetery. Two local Primitive Baptist elders, Watt Tuttle and Boss Brown, officiated the funerals. It would be held at noon on Friday, December 27th. They don't waste any time.
Hmm.
And 5,000 people showed up for it.
Wow.
According to the newspapers in 1929, 5,000 people showed up.
That's the whole city.
They knew that the funeral started at noon. They lined the streets. People showed up way early to get a good seat. They were all there for it. Now, Buck, the remaining son,
right,
he's devastated. And there was a report that he fell to his knees in front of the caskets, along with Charlie's brother, Marion.
Mm.
But this whole family is buried together in one mass grave. They're in different coffins, of course.
Right.
But they're all in one mass grave.
Wow.
Except for Fanny and the four-month-old baby. They are buried together in a coffin.
Okay.
Now, the next day, Saturday the 28th, Charlie Wade Hampton went out to the post office box. He picks up his mail, and in it was a postcard. It was a holiday card from Marie, mm-hmm, wishing him a Merry Christmas.
Oh, man.
That was her little boyfriend.
Yeah.
But people just kept coming to the farm. So Marion, Charlie's brother, decided, well, let's just fence off the place and start charging people who want to come see where the murders happened. I am not kidding you.
A little capitalism.
And by the middle of January 1930, just 3 weeks after the murders, the house was open as a tourist attraction.
Ugh.
And they even made homemade snow cream that you could buy.
Oh, my God.
So you could like eat your snow cream and see where the family was murdered.
Wow.
They displayed the murder weapons. The cake that Marie baked was on the table.
Jeez.
That original cake. And they would cover it up each night and put it in the refrigerator. And then they'd bring it out the next morning and put it on the edge of the table exactly where she left it.
Wow.
And people started stealing the raisins off the top.
Oh,
they were taking home a souvenir. That's why I told you she decorated it with raisins. Because these people are taking the raisins.
Wow.
Now, Buck Lawson, the one who's left behind, the son, he had a girlfriend. And as he gets a little bit older, he wants to marry this girl. And the father said no.
Oh, really?
Thinking that he could turn out to be just like his father.
Gee, that poor kid.
Buck would eventually pass away after a car crash at the age of 31. He was drunk and driving. He did marry a girl named Nina and had children. They all grew up in California, very far away from the Lawson farm.
Yeah.
But tragically, he became an alcoholic.
Sure. Not surprised.
So why did Charlie do it? Because all the newspaper articles in 1929 say Charles Lawson brutally murdered nearest kin in a fit of insanity on Christmas Day.
Mm.
That's the headline.
Yeah.
And the theory is that the blow to his head and the headaches, that's what drove him to somehow kill. That's what they said in all the newspapers in 1929. He went nuts because he'd had this head injury. But most believe now that it was Marie's pregnancy.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Fanny noticed that her daughter was pregnant. How could she not? She had 8 of her own. She's a mom. And apparently she begged Marie to tell her who the father was. Who is the father?
Right.
I know you're pregnant. Who's the father? And according to some, Marie did tell her mother. She finally told her mom that it was Charlie. It was Papa.
Hmm.
So did he kill the whole family to cover that up?
Yeah.
Here are some things we know. The funeral home where the bodies were taken is now the Madison Dry Goods. It operated in the building in historic downtown Madison, and the owners feature an upstairs museum that includes the rooms and memorabilia from the mortuary service of the Lawson family.
Oh, really?
The elevator used to transport the Lawson bodies to the second story is still working today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a 1908 brick building where this is located.
Okay.
This place is haunted.
You think?
This place is haunted. You can watch 28 Days on Netflix where this psychic medium and a demonologist stay there for 28 days. She's really good. Mm. But the whole idea behind it is that the Warrens said that if you were investigating something paranormal, you need 28 days to, quote, pierce the veil, like to find things out.
Okay.
Which would be great. We need to ask Catherine,
yeah.
Catherine Kaufman, psychic medium, the Hitch to Homicide official psychic medium, what she would think. Yeah. But they stay there and she really picks up on lots of things, including the pregnancy.
Oh, wow.
Dr. C.J. Helsebeck of Danbury was the Stokes County coroner who presided over the autopsies on the night of December 25th, 1929. Dr. Spotswood Taylor, great name, brother of the Stokes County Sheriff John Taylor, just happened to be home for Christmas from Johns Hopkins Medical Center in Baltimore, where he was serving as an intern. And he helped with the inquest. They worked all night long in Madison, North Carolina, at this funeral home, trying to figure out what happened. And Taylor assisted Dr. Hesselbeck in removing the brain of Charlie Lawson. They examined it that night. And they saw to it that a more in-depth analysis happened back in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins.
Nice.
He takes the brain back to work with him after after Christmas. It was preserved in formaldehyde, I heard. The brain's location is not known now. But initial autopsy reports said that Charlie Lawson's brain was relatively small and that a portion of the center of the brain seemed underdeveloped.
Really?
There was nothing in the autopsy report about Marie being pregnant.
Okay.
There's nothing in the autopsy report about that.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering, were they protecting Marie at the time?
Or did they even check for it?
Well, she had a hole blown through her, and if she's 3 months pregnant.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. They did the autopsy. Yeah. I think they knew she was pregnant. They didn't put in the report because they thought her dad already killed her.
Sure.
Why do this to a dead girl?
Right.
No reason to do that.
Right.
I already told you that 8 bodies were embalmed. Only 7 caskets were buried because little Mary Lou was with her mother nestled in her mom's arms.
Mm.
The headstone reads, "Not now, but in the coming years, it will be in a better land. We'll read the meaning of our tears, and then sometime we'll understand."
Wow.
All these years later, almost 100 years later, I don't think anybody understands.
No.
Yeah. I do want to say that the psychic medium that goes to the funeral home, who says that she feels the presence of this family. And the reason this paranormal team shows up is because it's a dry goods store downstairs.
Right.
But while people are there, they have reported that they have been poked or pinched or they've seen young kids, or they'll hear young kids running around the store.
Wow.
Yeah. But the psychic did say Marie was pregnant.
Okay.
Marie is telling her that she was pregnant.
Gotcha.
But that is the story of the Lawson family Christmas surprise. I hope that's not anybody else's Christmas surprise.
Yeah, really.
But that's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners. This is Chris Calvert. I love doing research and writing about real crimes, but I also love writing about fictional people who commit horrible atrocities. When you're ready to take a break from true crime for fictional crime, go to chriscalvert.com, where you'll find all my books, including some free ones to get you started. Jane Doe is one badass chick who quietly hunts terrorists in the United States. The Sex and Lies books are all FBI and CIA cases with a little romance on the side. And coming summer 2022, book 10 in the series, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, releases. You can find all of these books everywhere, and if you like to listen instead of read, you can find them all on Audible. So go grab a free book or take a listen. I love all the characters I've written. I've given them pain, ruined their lives, make them suffer, and maybe even throw in a heroic death. Or maybe they live to fight another day. Check it all out at chriscalvert.com. And thanks for being a listener of Hitched to Homicide.
Well, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Gee whiz.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You wanted true crime for Christmas.
Yeah.
I gave you true crime for Christmas, well, y'all.
There it is. Well, we're gonna shift gears now and get happy, okay?
I'm ready.
All right. A little bless your heart.
Well, bless your heart.
All right. I've got five of them for you today.
Five?
Five quick ones.
All right. I'm ready.
Number five. A guy robbed a caricature artist and left his drawing behind. The only thing he could have done better was to have left his driver's license.
Did he have a great big head? When they found him, did he have a great big yeah. head and a tiny little body?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, this one's so ridiculous that it had to make it to this bless your heart list. Cops released the drawing. And they're hoping
they didn't.
Yeah, they did. The cops released the drawing and they're hoping someone can ID him.
With his great big head. Was he like running? Was he doing an activity? Because they're like, do you like tennis? Yeah. Do you like basketball? And they always draw them doing something.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
That's funny.
All right. Number four. A guy took an axe to his family car because he thought his wife damaged his action figures.
What?
He also destroyed a TV and laptop. When cops got there, the axe was still stuck in the windshield of the car.
I think the car's probably worth, well, maybe not, depending on if he's got like a 1950 Aquaman or something. Yeah, that makes me think of the 40-year-old virgin.
That's true. Actually, yeah. I have a couple of family drama addendums here. A 13-year-old boy stabbed his older brother in the arm before a family road trip because he, quote, I'd rather be in jail than spend 8 hours in the car with him.
He's touching me. Don't touch me. Yeah. He's looking at me. Yeah. Every parent knows this.
And a guy in Ohio attacked his brother for not supporting his dream to audition for America's Got Talent.
Maybe he didn't have any talent.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Number three. A VHS rental store turned out to be a front for a gambling ring because there's nothing more conspicuous about running a VHS rental store in 2019. Yeah. Guys, come on. Think about this. Think it through.
Do you guys have the tape for The Godfather here? Yeah,
exactly. Number two, a guy went viral for buying a ton of Girl Scout cookies.
I love Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, the only problem was he got busted by the DEA for drug trafficking. He bought all the cookies the two girls had so they didn't have to stand out in the cold. And for one day, he was a hero until it turned out he was also a wanted criminal. I guess his weed made him really, really hungry.
And really, really high, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and number one, a woman got banned from Walmart for riding a motorized cart while drinking wine out of a Pringles can.
What's wrong with that? I've seen this one, and everybody says, okay, what's the big deal, man?
Yeah, well, after that, someone on Etsy was selling Pringle can wine tumblers for a while.
I just love all these enterprising people.
I know.
That's amazing. You go, Etsy girl.
And I have another Walmart that goes with this, number one, and another Walmart nonsense. A drunk woman in Pennsylvania walked into Walmart in July, peed on the potatoes, and then left.
Why'd she pick the potatoes?
I don't know. I
be careful where you buy your potatoes, people. That's all I can say.
Well, that's all I've got.
How'd she get up there? Our potatoes are really high. I mean, they're up to the top. They're not on the bottom.
She's talented.
I mean, they put the stuff that nobody buys down below.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
The rutabagas are down there. Yeah. The potatoes are up high.
She didn't want to pee on the rutabagas.
Well, if you have a bless your heart or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, all you got to do is go to the website, hitchtohomicide.com. Mm-hmm. There's a little pull-down menu. You can also suggest a case.
Yep.
and give us a bless your heart.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing some of those cases in 2023. But for today, we just want to wish everybody happy holidays, happy Hanukkah. Oh my gosh, Santa Claus is in the building, y'all.
Merry Christmas.
This is what I live with. I just want everyone to realize this.
I live in my own little world, but it's okay. They know me there.
Okay. That's all we have today. Everybody have a wonderful holiday season.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful bride.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.